have a pasuk in the sixth parsha, which is very, very strange. Mem Beis Lamed Zayin says, "The Yomer Reuben El Aviv." Reuben said to his father, Lamor, saying, "Eshnei Benai Tamis, kill my two children, if I don't bring Binyamin to you. To know so, Yogi, give him to me, and I'll take care of him for you. I'll return him to you." What an unbelievable pasuk. Reuben is willing to kill his own children to make sure that Binyamin was coming back. Who allowed him to do that? So, obviously, this is strange, right? Number one, who gave him permission to say such a thing? That's our first question over here. And it sounds like he's asking Yaakov to kill them himself if he doesn't bring Binyamin back. Tamis, you should kill them. What kind of a thing was that? Like, how in the world could a person even think of saying such a thing? So Yaakov's reaction is obvious. Rashi says that he didn't accept Reuben's words, and he calls him a Bechor Shota, this idiotic Bechor, right? Are they his children and not my children? How could he say that about my kids? And that's that. So we got to figure out what in the world was Reuben thinking, and what was the whole response of Yaakov? What's going on? So Mizrahi says that Yaakov didn't accept his words at all. He may have given an excuse in the pasuk. I'm afraid that tragedy is going to befall Binyamin, but since he didn't say the same words by Yehuda, he's not afraid of that by Yehuda. It simply means Yaakov didn't trust Reuben. Scary, isn't it? Yaakov had no trust in Reuben whatsoever. He trusted Yehuda, but he had no trust in Reuben. He never thought anything was going to happen. The Medrash says when Rabbi Tarfon heard something, when somebody said something that didn't make any sense, Rabbi Tarfon said it, he would say, "Lo yerid bini imachem," which is the wording that Yaakov said to Reuben, "My son's not going with you." Because he said, like, "I just don't trust you." That's what he would tell him, "I don't trust you at all." He treated Reuben's words as being wasted completely, as if they were just being wasted, and that's the idea behind it. Now, the Ramban says a little bit differently. He did trust Reuven's words. He might have had it. And this is the idea. First of all, Reuven had four children. He offered Kephel. "I lose one of your kids, I'll give you double of mine." But Yaakov didn't trust Reuven because of what happened before with Bilhah, moving the bed around, and he didn't trust him as a person.
What does Kephel give him two of his kids?
It means to do whatever you want with. And seemingly to kill. We haven't explained that part yet, but either way, right? Or you would have made a great claim, and they were already getting hungry, which made Yaakov even more amenable to his demands. In other words, the reason why he agreed to Yehuda, but not to Reuven, was either because he didn't trust Reuven because of Bilhah, or he was already, they were starving. By the time Yehuda said, "All right, let's go," by Reuven, they weren't hungry yet. But as time went on, and they were starving, Yaakov said, "All right, I don't have a choice," so he trusted Yehuda, and that was there.
Reuven was implying that there's absolutely no way anything would have been under my watch.
So that's for sure, but the wording is so strange.
Right, that's why I say something so crazy is because it's never going to happen.
Okay, we are going to explain what it means by Tumis, and we'll get to that. We're going to get all together, I think it's 12 answers.
Why can't it be something more simple like, you'll get the zechusim of my kids?
That's weird though. Why would he say the word Tumis? The wording of Tumis. Remember, why did Rachel Imenu die? Why did she die?
Because he cursed her.
Because Yaakov cursed her by saying what? Whoever has the Avodah Zarah in his hands should die. Yeah. You don't say things like that. You don't say things like that. Reuben should have learned that from Yaakov Avinu. Right? Why wouldn't you be careful with your wording? If you mean something else, then say something else. The word Tamis is crazy.
Don't have the sacrifice in Navi when he says the first thing I see on the sacrifice was his daughter?
That's Gito. Right, that's 100%. Yiptach, I'm sorry. But Yiptach who said that. That's crazy. You don't do such things. So the Shach says he couldn't trust Reuven, because this is an interesting little answer of the Shach. He didn't think he had the merit to save Binyamin because of his sin of Bilbul Yitzhuyavav, of moving around the bed. He just thinks, I think that what that means is, since Reuven already had a sin that affected his father directly, he moved around the beds, which affected his father directly, he wouldn't be able to expect to have that siyata deshmaya, the extra help from heaven, to be able to save him in that way. Yehuda, he didn't know sold Yosef. What he did know is that Yehuda was together with Tamar, but that didn't affect his father directly from what his father knew. So his father looked at Yehuda and said, he'll have siyata deshmaya. But Reuben won't have siyata deshmaya. Reuben affected me, Yehuda didn't. So maybe that's the idea of what he was trying to say, and I think that might be the idea of what the Shach was trying to say. Okay, the Maleh HaOmer, which is a sefer that I found in a group of, one of those, the white sefer, what's that called? Mayana Shaltar, I think it is. Says the reason he accepted Yehuda, not Reuben, because the Shvatim claimed that Yosef couldn't be a king, since Yerubbaal would come from in the future. Somehow the Shvatim had like a Ruach HaKodesh. They saw that Yosef's kids were not going to be good enough. So he said, alright, Yosef can't be king, he's going to have bad kids. Yosef's claim back to them was in last week's Parsha. He said, or this week's Parsha, I'm sorry, Meraglim Atem. You guys are a bunch of spies. You're going to have the spies who don't allow us to go to Israel. So his claim back to them is you're also going to have evil kids. Now why specifically Yeravam's? Why specifically the spies? That's a good question. But regardless, he said, that was the idea behind it. Yaakov only accepted Yehuda's guarantee since he would have nothing to do with the Meraglim. His tribe had colors. Reuven had a son that was part of the Meraglim, but Yehuda's didn't, so that was there. It's a strange answer, because Yosef had two kids that were sent by the Meraglim. One of them listened to Moshe Rabbeinu, that was Yoshua ben Nun from Shevet Ephraim. The other one from Menashe was Gadi ben Susi. He didn't listen. So it's a little weird that he's saying, you guys have the Meraglim. And he also had the Meraglim. The Meraglim were involved with him. But regardless, that's the Moli Omer's answer over here. Now we're going to go with the last one before we get into the actual wording of the pasuk. The Orach Chaim HaKadosh says Reuven knew he was clean from the sin of selling Yosef. He wasn't involved. Therefore, he felt he was going to be successful in bringing Binyamin back. He said, Al Yadi, Tno Sol Yadi, give it to me, because my other brothers, they're all messed over, because they were all involved in selling Yosef, but I'm the only one who didn't. So listen to this. The Chassam Sofer says that Reuven was too stark. He said, Tno Sol Yadi. Now, Yaakov Avinu learned Gemara, and he figured out how to be medayik in words. He was able to infer from what people were saying. I don't know if he actually learned Gemara. But he definitely knew how to infer. He definitely knew how to infer from what people were saying. As soon as Reuven said, Tna oso al yadi, he was hinting, hint, hint, Yaakov, my brothers were involved with what happened to Yosef, but I wasn't. To which Yaakov said, you just spoke Lashon Hara. You just spoke Lashon Hara. I can't believe you said that. How could you have said such a thing? How could you have even implied such a thing? How could that be? Because Reuven said such a thing, he's being punished. Not because he had promised the children necessarily or anything that he did with that, but because of what you said. You're so foolish for saying a thing that you never should have said in the first place.
How do you
like helps over?
Derived from all the ideas. Oh, so must be you guys are responsible for Yosef, and it's everybody for Reuven.
It's funny, because the Orach Chaim HaKadosh says that's exactly the pshat. Also, Yadi, the pshat is give him to me because I'm the only one not involved. To which Yaakov made that deal.
That
was cool.
That makes sense. What?
Perhaps you could have such a situation. Rare to find such a thing where one person says something and you accept his words as something. You'd have to have like a Talmud Mufak that would say such a thing for it not to be Lashon Hara. It's weird. It definitely is weird. But it's an amazing. The idea is such a crazy idea from the Chassam Sofer. We're going to see a lot of the Chassam Sofer.
That also, I mean, it kind of also doesn't make sense because they swore under an oath not to reveal to Yaakov,
yeah,
like what happened.
Yeah.
So even if he's hinting to it,
nine of them did. Reuven never swore because Reuven never was involved.
I thought from last week, 2 weeks ago, that he said that when they swore, everyone was involved, even Hakadosh Baruch Hu, even Yitzchak.
Well, no, I didn't say that. The tenth one was promised and somehow was involved. The question is, who is the tenth guy involved? There were nine shvatim actually involved.
Say that when a shvua is enacted by 10 people, by a quorum of 10, then everybody...
Yeah, that's already a kasha. But you can get around that, and either way, especially Reuven, who may not have ever known what happened to Yosef, a full idea of what happened to Yosef, it's possible that he definitely could have gotten around it. It's definitely possible. Okay, but we still have to understand why Reuven would offer such a thing. Why are you offering your two sons to die? Even if he had a good idea, according to all these Rishonim, even if there was a concept of why Yaakov wouldn't accept it, what was he asking? What was he doing in the first place? So Rav Schwab says, crazy thing, Aaron Onan had just died from Yehuda. Right? No one had any idea why they died. We know it's because of the whole Shechva Zeru Levatola thing where they weren't together with Tamar, that the Gemara tells us, and really the Pasuk says they were Rab Eini Hashem, they were doing things that were bad. Fine. That's what the Pasuk tells us. But they didn't know that. So here's the way that Reuven thought, and maybe all the other Shvatim thought this as well. It could be that everybody thought that the reason why was simple. Yaakov Avinu cursed whoever was involved in the sale of Yosef should lose his two kids. Whoever's involved in getting rid of my son should lose two of his kids. Yehuda was the one that sold Yosef, therefore he lost two kids. That's why they died. It wasn't because they did anything wrong, but it was because of that. So Reuven went up to Yaakov and said, I'm willing to take that on for myself with your other son. For Binyamin, if you want to make that again and say that the two sons should die, if that
then,
person that goes
then
through...
He's lying that if Yaakov really did make the covenant and
Yehuda said
that, then Reuven really is implying that, oh yeah, he's... Yehuda was responsible for Yosef.
That's a real implication,
that's,
right?
Yeah.
That's the real implication. It could be all that's fucking held that way. And maybe they were all thinking that way from what it was. But you're right. Definitely an implication that was there.
Then,
and that's what he said.
But then it doesn't make sense for Yaakov's answer.
No. So now Yaakov's answer is like, he said, the line was, you can curse my two sons to die if I don't bring them back to you, the same way you did for Yehuda. Said Yaakov, you think I ever made that curse? You before showed it. You think I ever would want to kill my grandchildren? I would never do that. That wasn't my curse. That's crazy talk.
Yeah, but
I would never have done that.
The curse didn't happen, but it had happened. He didn't know that it was Yehuda. So when he made the curse, he didn't know that it was
Yehuda. You have no idea. Sort of, I guess you could say the same way that he killed Rachel, I mean, with his words. Maybe they thought he killed Yehuda's kids with his words, not realizing what he had done. So Reuven definitely got involved and said it, but you are right. According to Chasam Sofer, he was much more explicit with this shot than it was anywhere else. Now, Yonas of New Zealand says the easy answer. It wasn't death, it was cherem. That was a normal thing back in the day. You can excommunicate my children, which was a form of death. I know, that's the concept. We'll get to that. But one of the greatest, we'll see as we get to it. But that's that. The Ibn Ezra says, tanish. The word is punish them. Punish them if I don't bring Binyamin back. But certainly they shouldn't be killed literally. Either way, he definitely said something wrong. Whether it's the Ibn Ezra of tanish, or Yonas Ibn Uziel saying it's a cherem. Either way, he said something wrong. Yeah.
Couldn't it be just like, the punishment of not having your lineage going forward is like the biggest punishment?
Why would he want to do that to himself?
No, Binyamin's saying this because, to my knowledge, he doesn't have any children yet. Yes, I agree with you. You're punishing your kids. I couldn't do it. I wouldn't be able to do it.
It's the biggest punishment itself to kill them because you're not going to have any
lineage.
Everything back then was like, oh, my kid will continue my dynasty.
Yeah.
People married wives so they would have them sons. You know what I mean? That's like the biggest
punishment. So it makes sense. Yeah, you're saying that it makes sense that what he was doing was saying the worst thing for him, which is don't only kill me, kill my children.
You kill my whole lineage.
That would have to be the idea. That's for sure. That's true. Now I got some Rishonim over here. They're all on the bottom of the Torah Shlema. The Riva says the Chas V'Shalom, the Reuven ever said it. He meant, and if you notice this line, if I don't bring them back, nischayavti, that two of my children should die for that sin. In other words, I should be chayav for that to happen, but not that literally it'll happen. It's almost like I owe you one. I owe you one. That's the line, as if to say, it says if they should die, but not that literally they should die. Or he meant that it should be misavidei shamayim. Let shamayim take care of it. Not that you're going to kill him, Yaakov Avinu, but shamayim should be involved and try to get them to kill.
Let shamayim kill grandchildren for the sins of Avos Avonim.
Yeah, but there's the other one. Okay, to Avon Avos Avonim as well. But then you got to answer the kasha. So somehow let shamayim take care of it. And if I should die, I'll die. If my kids should die, my kids should die. Whatever it is. Let Shemayim take care of it. The Torah says he meant it to happen through a plague, similar to that answer of the Rival. And the Marie Chalava says it was a tefillah to Hashem, not directly to Yaakov, which could explain all three answers, really, that it was just a tefillah. It was never meant for Yaakov to kill him, but that Hashem should hear his pleas. All four of these answers, the honest truth is that he wasn't mentioning it toward Yaakov. He was really trying to say it toward HaKadosh Baruch Hu to make sure that it happened, and that's what the Rishonim were saying. All right, number seven. Then it seems says, it was death. He offered his sons to take the place of Binyamin in Shemayim if anything would happen. In other words, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, allow, instead of Binyamin dying, my two sons will die instead of Binyamin. It could be that Yehuda, that Reuven held, that Binyamin's life was worth his own son's death. That he was so chashuv of Binyamin, he was willing to allow, and he's asking, if the Satan's going to be Makatrik, if he's going to accuse, and Binyamin has to die, then allow my sons to take his place. As if to say, let them die instead. It's a crazy shot from the Nitzitz. But either way, Yaakov wouldn't accept it. He wouldn't accept it whatsoever. And here comes the famous Chasam Sofer. This is a very, very famous Chasam Sofer, because what he says is mentioned by a bunch of other Achronim who seem to get it from him. Number eight, the Chasam Sofer says like this. He never intended for them to die. Never intended for them to die. He thought that he was now the Bechor, that Reuven was the Bechor. If so, he had a double portion in Eretz Yisrael. the double portion would be given over to his sons. That would be a double portion shared by those two sons, maybe. The same way that Manasseh and Ephraim split up Yosef's chelek, his sons, his oldest two sons, they would be the ones who split up his double chelek, his portion, double portion in Eretz Yisrael. We see that Chazal Darshan, Yoshua and Kalev, after the Meraglim happened, they were the only two Meraglim, the only two spies who didn't do anything wrong. It says they were Chayu Min Ha'anashim. They lived from those men, from the Meraglim, meaning they took their portion of Eretz Yisrael. The portion of the Meraglim was given over to Yoshua and Kalev. So they were Chayu Min Ha'anashim. They lived from the portion that was given over to them. So it's likely, says the Chasam Sofer, that Misa means to lose the portion of Eretz Yisrael. If Chayu means to gain a portion of Eretz Yisrael, then Misa means to lose that portion of Eretz Yisrael. So this is what he told his father. I'm willing my two sons to lose their rights to the Bechor status. I'm willing for their chelek to no longer be split between them. I'm willing for them to die from their chelek in Eretz Yisrael. You get it? It's a crazy pshat, says the Chasam Sofer. It has nothing to do with death.
It's getting rid of it. That's why I didn't want to take it.
Oh no, more so. Think of the wording. The wording is Yaakov knew that he had already lost that status. He was the firstborn, but he no longer had the firstborn status. Remember, he lost it by Bilhah's bed, by moving around Bilhah's bed, right? So we call him a Bechor Shota. What's a Bechor Shota? It's Gemara Bava Basra Kuf Chav Zayin that mentions Bechor Shota. A Bechor Shota is a Bechor who doesn't get a full inheritance. He doesn't get a full inheritance. Meaning, he's a Bechor, he's known as the firstborn, but he doesn't get the inheritance of a Bechor, the double portion that should be given over to him. So Yaakov said, you're a Bechor Shota. You're not a Bechor who has a double portion. Your kids were never going to get the double portion. So you're saying, I'm willing to lose my double portion. Yeah, the double portion that you never had. That's what he says. And then the line is, Bunav Haim below Bunai. So you can learn that in two different ways. Either number one, right? Bunav Haim, they're his children, and not my children as well. I would never let them die mamish. So it must be that you're saying to take away their chelek and Eretz Yisrael that they're the Bechors. But you're not a Bechor. So it doesn't happen to you. And if you're saying you want to kill them mamish, well, that's crazy. It's my grandchildren as well. But there's another way of looking at it. You could say that he asked it as a question. Does he really think they're my children? What does he say? What does Yaakov say by Ephraim and Menasha? Ephraim and Menasha? Kiruvein v'shimun yuli. Meaning, they're like his children. Ephraim and Menasha. You hear it? Now listen. Said Rashi, Bonav Haim below Bonai.
Oh,
they're his kids, Reuven's, but they're not mine. So they're not considered the double portion. They're not like Ephraim and Menasha. They're not like Ephraim and Menasha. They're his kids, Reuven's kids. They'll split up Reuven's chelek, but they're not my kids. They're not getting a double portion. They're not like Ephraim and Menasha. That's the idea behind it. What a brilliant answer from the Chasam Sofer. As a side note, by the way, that idea of what a Bechor Shota is, that idea, Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky says, seems like a Bechor Shota in the Gemara is a Bechor who's a Bechor from the father, but not the mother, or a Bechor from the mother, but not the father. It's a chiddush to say that losing your inheritance is included in the statement of Bechor Shota. He does say that in Divra Yamim Aleph, Parakeh, Pasuk Pei Aleph, maybe losing your inheritance is considered that you're not really the Bechor anymore, but it's a crazy pshat of Yaakov Kamenetsky. So he doesn't necessarily agree with the Chasam Sofer's like almost like guarantee, like, oh yeah, it means you're losing your inheritance. Rabbi Yaakov looks at it and says, I don't know where that comes from. He's not talking about the Chasam Sofer, but it's Stam altogether. Now, truth is, it's all in the Rishonim. It's not really the Chasam Sofer's Chiddush. There's a sefer called the Hadar Zakenim that says that Tumis means a lashon of becoming poor. We know there are four people that are considered dead, even though they're not dead. A person who's blind, a person who has Tzaraas, a person without children, and a person who is poor. All four people are included in people that are considered dead. So Tumis could be that. A poor person, he's saying, Yaakov, take away their inheritance completely if I don't bring Binyamin back. So really, that shot from the Chasam Sofer, it can be learned out from this idea. The Kiddush of learning it out from the Meraglim is the Chasam Sofer's. But saying that they should be poor is already there. By the, as a side note, Yechiru Vein Ba'al Yamos, he should live and not die, was Yaakov's bracha that he should have a large large portion of land. Reuben actually had the largest portion of land, quantitatively, than all of his brothers. He had a huge swath of land outside of Eretz Yisrael. And that land was bigger than anything else. Either way, the Maril Diskin says the same thing, but adds on that if Yosef was gone, then the double portion should have fallen on Binyamin. Reuben was thus under suspicion. Reuben wants Binyamin gone. Because if Binyamin's gone, then who's going to be the Bechor? Now it's going to go back to Reuben, you'd assume. So Reuben was saying, I swear to you, that's not what I want. I'm telling you, that's not what I want. My two sons won't get the double portion if Binyamin's gone. I'm not going to try to get rid of Binyamin in order to get the double portion.
If a family doesn't have a Bechor, the Bechor doesn't transfer to the next.
See, it's all interesting. There is a Bechor, though. That's the problem. It's only the Bechor status was lost because the kasha was, who is the real mother, Rachel or Leah? And maybe you could take it away in some way, shape, or form. It is definitely weird how to be able to set it up. But I will tell you, Lemaisa, at the end of the day, the splitting of the land of Eretz Yisrael has nothing to do with Bechor. Think about it for a second. Let's say I have guaranteed money that's coming to me 10 years after I pass away at 120. Okay? Guaranteed money. I don't know how, but like I have a stock option or whatever it is in 2000, I don't forget how old I am. Let's just say I'll die in 2183. Okay? So it's pretty good, right?
Not bad.
Yeah, no, it was a good life. I really liked it. But in 2193, there's going to be these stock options that go, and like all of a sudden it's going to be $1 million from there. But $1 million will be like $12. But either way, right? So let's say that's what ends up happening. My sons don't split up. Roy Kibamuksuk, money that has not yet been made, like money that I already have. That money is not split up in the same way that the Bechor gets a double portion. Eretz Yisrael was not owned by Yaakov Avinu yet. So it's not like you get, you're the Bechor, so therefore you get a double portion in Eretz Yisrael. No, it is no shaykhis to one another. He doesn't own Eretz Yisrael yet. The double portion really dealt with the stuff that Yaakov Avinu owned, and that may have gone to Reuben. It may very well have gone to Reuben. But this idea of who's going to be the Bechor and get the double portion in Eretz Yisrael, that's what we're talking about over here. It's not really a Bechor status. Either way.
He already had a kingdom, so it's not like he needs anything more.
Who, Yosef?
Yeah.
Although he was pretty rich, yeah. Yeah, you never know. Maybe it was a family heirloom. It was a little,
pretty much the world.
There was a little elephant that had all those little jewels on it, right? Like Bubby's little elephant.
Stole.
Yeah, I didn't say I stole it. I just said that I took it. Anyway, there were no real jewels on there. Okay.
Oh, sure, that's why they're all picked off.
Yeah, that's true. That is
true. The ruby.
Yeah, the ruby, the sapphire, right. I didn't want to tell anybody about that. On the other hand, the Chassam Sofer says in another Sefer, totally different, that his sin was not in offering his sons, but assuming that his sons were going to get the double portion, and that was the problem in the first place. That's another idea of the Chassam Sofer, and that Chassam Sofer says it the opposite way as well, but let's go in the other way. We got to bring down the shelves to this Binyan Seam. This Binyan Sin is written in the Pardes Yosef. It is one of the greatest answers I have ever seen. He asks four questions, he gives four introductions to his pshat, and then he explains his pshat, and you finally understand what's going on here. All these ideas were nice. Everything we set up until now was nice. But listen to this Binyan Sin. He says the following. Number one, who gave Reuben permission to take away the inheritance of his two kids? Let's say it is inheritance. Who gave him permission to do that? You're not allowed to kill your kids. You're not allowed to take away inheritance of your two kids. You can't do that. Since when are you allowed to do that? That's number one. Number two, if you had four kids, why was he only talking about two? As Shnei Banai Tamis. Why are you talking about two kids? You have four children. So by Yosef, there were two kids, Ephraim and Manasseh. But Reuben had four. So where are the other two kids? Your Bechor status is only split up with your first two kids, but not all four of them? You should have said, it's Arba Bonai Tomis. Kill four of my children. Take away all of their inheritances. Why is he only saying two? Number three, why, and this is your question from before, why is he punishing his kids and not himself? Now granted, you answered that, Daniel, by saying, right, that it's referring to, right, killing his kids is like worse than anything that could happen to himself. Nonetheless, Yehuda said straight out, put me in Chirim if I don't bring Binyamin back. That's what Reuben should have done. That's number three. Number four, Yaakov Avinu called him a Bechor Shota, an idiot. The Pasuk doesn't hint to that at all. The Pasuk says that Yaakov said, Lo yerid b'ni imachem, my son's not going to go with you. Why? I'm afraid a tragedy is going to befall him on the road. And that makes sense. That makes a lot of sense. I don't want him to go because I'm afraid. Who says he didn't trust Reuben? Who says that he called Reuben an idiot? Maybe he didn't call Reuben an idiot. How does Rashi know that he called him an idiot? So to answer this question, you've got to know four things. Number one, Nidorim Dafkas. We say that if you say you're going to do a mitzvah, that's called a nether. Just saying out loud, I will light Hanukkah menorah. I will light the Hanukkah menorah tomorrow night. That is a nether right there. Okay? I'm hoping that that's Mizari's me to do it, but I'll say believe nether just in case.
But your Mushra right? Omen Mar Sinai doesn't...
That's part of it. Nidre mitzvah are different because it's only to be Mizari's you to do so. That's how you're able to make a nether mitzvah. But that's exactly the sugi over there in Nidarm Dafches. That's number one. The first thing is, if you say out loud you're going to do a mitzvah, it's a nether. Number two, if your father is mochel on his kavod, he could be mochel on his kavod. If you ask your father to sit in his seat and he says, of course you can, that is perfectly mutter. That's number two. Number three, a neder is different from nidui. A neder, right, let's go into nidui first. Yehuda, we learn from Yehuda that a nidui al tanai, if you put yourself, you excommunicate yourself on condition, you always need to be made for, you got to take away that nidui, even if there's an onus involved. Even if there's an onus, like Yosef holding Binyamin back. Nidui is putting, excommunicating yourself. That works. And if you excommunicate yourself, even if there's a condition involved, it works no matter what until you get rid of it by going to a chacham and taking it off you. And even with an onus involved, even if something happens that's totally beyond your control, if you put yourself in chayrim that nothing will happen to Binyamin and Binyamin gets struck by lightning, you still go into nidui. You're still excommunicated. That's number three. But a neder is broken if there's an onus. Nidre onus, you're potter. A neder with an onus, you're potter for it. Number four, Shabbos on these we learn that if a person sins when it comes to nidarim, your children die. That's what the Gemara says in Nedarim on the days, that if you promise things and it doesn't come to fruition because you cheated on it or whatever it is, your children will die. Reuven's oldest sons, Hanoch and Palu, were already over 13. So those children will not die for your sins. Get it? But his two youngest sons, Chetzron and Carmi, were under 13. It's possible, says the Shalosh Yisbenos. We don't know how old they were, but they may have been under 13. So Reuben was essentially saying, I promise to bring Binyamin back. And if I promise it, and I don't follow through on my promise, what's going to happen to my kids? My kids are going to die. How many kids? Only two. Not four. Two of them are going to die. I'm sorry? The two youngest ones. And that's why he didn't say all four, because everybody knew his two oldest ones were not involved in this. But the two youngest ones were possibly going to die. This nether is mutter to make. It's a nether mitzvah to do so for kibud av. And he said to Yaakov, you know, I'm willing to do it for you out of your honor, but I'm putting it in your hands. If you want this to happen, allow me to do it. If you don't want it to happen, then okay. Don't let it happen. That's what he's trying to say. He was waiting for Yaakov's response to hear what Yaakov was going to say. Are you going to say yes or are you going to say no? And essentially what he was doing was making a neder that nothing would happen b'mezid against Binyamin. I will not kill him. I will not throw him in a pit. I will not do anything wrong to Binyamin. But the problem is like this. Yaakov said, this is a Bechor Shota. The guy is making a massive, massive mistake. Why would I want, even if he did do that, why would I want there even to be a possibility of Reuven's sons dying? Why would I even want to even think that that might happen? I don't know if I totally trust Reuven, and I don't know if I probably don't trust Reuven. If I don't trust Reuven, what's going to happen? He's going to do something bad to Binyamin, which means not only is Binyamin gone, but also Reuben's kids are gone.
If Reuben's willing to kill his brother, why does he care?
Yeah, well, maybe he doesn't care about it. Maybe he's cruel. Maybe he's a terrible person. But he didn't want to verbalize those suspicions. He didn't want to say that out loud. So he didn't verbalize it out loud. He didn't say that. The only thing he said was something that made sense. I'm not going to do it, and I'm going to be mochel on my kavod, and I'm not going to let you make this neder for kibud av v'aim, because I'm afraid an ones will happen. Something beyond your control. And if it's beyond Reuven's control, then Reuven's not responsible for it. And therefore his kids won't die in the first place. So Yaakov made a lot of sense. He said out loud, Shkoyach, I appreciate what you're trying to do. I hear you. I think it's great. I think you're really, really a good person. But no, it's not happening. Because if it's an ones, there's no way to get around it. And your neder is in chal. So there's nothing we can do. We're not going to have it. Yeah.
Is it that the children would die if a person breaks his neder to do a mitzvah? But if a person breaks his nether, that he won't violate him. In other words, I won't steal that candy bar and he breaks it, or is it I will keep Shabbat and he breaks it?
Both.
It's both.
Either one, yeah. That's the idea. Any nether that a person makes and breaks, no matter what it is, that would be included in such a thing. We have to explain exactly how a nether works, but we're not going to go into that right now. But yes, that's the idea. And that's why he's worried. Yehuda later understood it. And he understood the problem that Yaakov had was he was afraid about an ones happening. So what did he do? He promised with a nidui that Binyamin would be taken care of. And that means he would take care of him even if an ones happens. And that's why Yehuda was listened to. Because Yaakov didn't want to relay his suspicions out loud. He only said, well, I don't want an ones to happen. So Reuben's taina of his claim of, I'll make a nether, that's not going to help over here. But a nidui would. You would have figured it out and said, okay, I'll do that. And then Yaakov would have said, okay, I'll give him over to you. You're willing to be responsible no matter what. And that was an ones. In the end, there was an ones. What was the ones? Binyamin grabbed Binyamin because, not Binyamin, Yosef grabbed Binyamin claiming that he had stolen the goblet. Right. So Yehuda had to put himself on the line. Yeah. And said, I'm responsible. I'm in nidui if that doesn't happen. That's the famous line. Let next week's parsha, you guys all know it. Vayigash elav Yehuda, vayomer biaduni. Yehuda approached and said, please, my master, right? The trump, says the Gra, is vayigash elav Yehuda, kadma ve'azla revi. The pshat is, why did the fourth to oldest get up in front of Yosef? What about Reuven? What about Shimon? What about Levi? Right? What happened to you guys? Why is the fourth oldest? You get it? Kadma, Ma'azla. He got up and he went. Revi'i, the fourth to oldest. Why is the fourth to oldest getting up? You know why? Because the next two words, Bayomer Biaduni, is Zarka Munach Segel. I know it's not in Sephardi, but it's Zarka Munach Segel. Don't call it differently. But he threw away his placement in Olam Haba. That's why Yehuda had to step up. Because he threw away Zarka Munach, his resting place in Segel, in Olam Haba. So he said, Yehuda, I have to be responsible. I have no choice. I'm in Nidui if I don't bring him back. Because this is an Ones, but I'm still responsible. So that's that. I'm going to go with one quick thing. The Orach Chaim Kadosh says specifically, he said the word Tumis. But because he said it in such a way where it wasn't explicit that I'll kill him or they should die, he said, you can kill him if you want to. That's why his sons did not die, unlike Ruchel. By Ruchel is, whoever stole the truffin should not live. But here he said, you should kill them if you want to. So therefore, his two sons did not die. Even though they should have, they didn't die. So that's why his wording was correct. The Baal HaTurim says the opposite. Baal HaTurim says, no, it did happen. It just didn't happen then. It happened by two sons that deserved to die. He says that the words, Es Shnei, right, his two sons, is the gematria of 761, which is the gematria of Elu, Dasan, Ba'aviram. And Dasan Da'aviram later on died by Korach because of what Reuven said right over here. I have one more pshat to go through. It's from the Sforno, but I don't think I'm going to do it right now. I'm going to leave it at this. Just, if you look at the Sforno compares this whole case to something crazy, the Gemara in Shabbos Kuf Ches. You're going to have to think of a Chiddush for that case, because I don't know what the Sforno is talking about. I don't know what the comparison is at all. I have an idea over here, but I have absolutely no idea what the actual answer is. So that Sforno is absolutely crazy. I don't know what he's talking about. So we'll stop with that, guys. Everybody